Welcome to episode 8 of Seagull Eagle Podcast, the show that's half Brighton, half Palace, and fully fueled by chaos, questionable takes, and the occasional football insight. This week is the last week of the Premier League season, with lots to talk about, including
Brighton come from behind to beat the actual European champions, Tottenham. The Seagulls did their bit, sealed 8th place, but then the other results turned up like a tax bill on your birthday.
Meanwhile, Palace tried to crash Liverpool's goodbye party, but generously let them take a point, in return, of course, for a guard of honour. Back in South London, we also threw a party of our own, on the pitch, on the bus, and in the pub, and probably still going somewhere in Croydon.
Thanks for tuning in. Now let's get into it before Andy mentions Europe again.
This is Seagull Eagle. Have you had a good week, Neil?
Yeah, I've had a lovely week, Andy. It's been all right, actually. The sun's been out, although today it's decided to chuck it down. But overall, I've had a good week. Saw the last games of the season, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
And one of us has been partying this week as well. Not me, by the way.
I mean, you had a good result, though, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a good result. Really enjoyed the actual game, watching it. The result overall, maybe not quite what I wanted, but yeah, we all knew I was clutching at straws. Anyway, let's get to that later. First of all, I want to talk...
Moved on quickly there,
yeah,
Neil.
Absolutely, yeah. Can we finish now? And that was Seagull Eagle. Good night.
We'll talk about the miracles that we mentioned last week later. I've had a good week. We did the FA Cup parade and right. The after party. Should we have a chat about that?
Maybe leave that to a bit later. That'd be great. A little bit later.
All right, mate. All right. Well, in that case then, should we kick things off by talking about when Crystal Palace went to Anfield to take on the champions, Liverpool. In fact, we're champions too, aren't we?
I don't think it quite works like that.
It's like champions versus champions. In fact, funny enough, it's the Community Shield, isn't it?
That's got time to talk about that, Andy. Yet.
Okay. Well, in that case then, we'll do a review of the game.
Please.
So the Community Shield pre-match, should we call it the rehearsal for the big game at Wembley coming up later on this year? Palace took on the Premier League champions, and nothing says season finale like one emotionally confusing trip to Anfield. No one really quite knew what we were doing, whether everyone was going to be wearing sombreros on the pitch or floating on lilos, or whether anyone actually cared too much about what the score was. Oli Glasner thought differently. He wanted to win every single game. And I think Liverpool, to be fair, was getting a bit embarrassing, wasn't it? They were setting records for the wrong reason. Not winning a game since they've won the title. So I think for them, it was actually, they needed to win a game. You can't convincingly lift the Premier League trophy in front of your home fans after getting beaten by Palace in your own backyard, can you? It's not a thing you can do.
I think they had to show up this time, didn't they?
They did, and they just about did. So Glasner made 4 changes from the starting 11 from the win against Wolves. Back in the side were Tyrick Mitchell, Kamada, Eze, and John Philippe Mateta, aka the gang that you actually don't want turning up to a party against Liverpool. Dropped to the bench, you've got Joel Ward, Essa and Nketiah, who clearly needed a lie down after all that midweek excitement. As for Ben Chilwell, he was out with illness for the game. Maybe the thought of going back to Chelsea after his loan finish this week might have been made him feel a bit queasy, do you think?
That would do it for anyone, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And of course, Gay and Wharton were still injured from that epic Battle of Wembley. So Dean Henderson took the armband, also, of course, due to Gay being injured. So Liverpool then, they made 4 changes, clearly meaning business, with Andy Robertson and Virgil van Dijk being recalled into defence. There were also starts for Diaz and Jones as well. Now here's a wild stat for you, Neil.
Blimey, we've gone early on stats.
Palace are actually pretty decent at Anfield.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
You mean apart from the 9-0 that they lost?
Well, let's not worry about that.
Okay.
So our last 4 league wins against Liverpool were all away at Anfield. Now, Palace start the day. Wow, where was it again?
Oh, I can tell you this one.
Go on, Neil.
12th.
obviously. But mathematically, if the stars align, and this is something you should be really familiar with, Neil, looking at clutching at straws. If five teams collapse, then the football gods are in a good mood. We could finish potentially as high as ninth if we win that game. It could be our successive top 10 finish, which is what Glasner and the team were hoping for, to not only break our top Premier League record score in terms of plus 50 mark and keep going.
Yeah, because you've already done that, didn't
you? Already done it, yeah, but we want to keep going.
Yeah, sure.
We could also finish back-to-back top 10, which we haven't done before.
Right.
Believe it or not.
Okay.
Because every time we have a good season, it's followed by a bad start
season. Yeah, no, I believe that.
So, anyway, the players enter the pitch, and before a ball is even kicked, there was a real, I don't know, mutual appreciation society at Anfield. As tradition demands, Palace gave Liverpool the customary guard of honour. As the previous teams had done before for the last couple of weeks, applauding the new Premier League champions onto the pitch, as per. Very respectful, very classy, and a tiny little bit painful to clap the champions, as always.
Yeah.
But then, in a twist that not many people saw coming, Liverpool returned the favour. It was lovely. After walking through Palace's guard, they stopped, they turned around, and they clapped us through.
I don't think I've ever seen anything like that before. It was very strange. It was a bit like a barn dance. I just didn't really understand what was going on, first of all. And I don't know. I thought they were taking the mickey, first of all. And then I realised this isn't actually seriously. They're doing a guard of honour.
No, it's legit. It's absolutely legit. Because let's not forget, we're not just there to make up the numbers, Neil. We're FA Cup winners. And Arne Slot's team knew it, man. He knew it. Two teams, two trophy winners, two guards of honour. One giant mutual pat on the back before 90 minutes of football, where everyone was just hoping not to pull a hamstring before their summer holidays. It was like the Oscars, but with shin pads and slightly worse haircuts. And that's all, Neil, before the whistle had even blown. So, the game itself then, just 9 minutes in, the Liverpool celebrations turned into a stunned silence. Tyrick Mitchell, who, by the way, had the game of his life on that game, probably his best performance this season,
really,
from my perspective. Not only was he great in defence, he was also great in attack, something that he's not kind of been known for, for both. And I'm not dissing him, because he's brilliant and he's one of the best, but he's not been known for that kind of Glasner style attacking and getting that final ball and all that. He was just brilliant. But I digress. Mitchell pounced on a sloppy pass, twisted, turned, and played in Saar beautifully, who drifted through Liverpool's defence like a bloke avoiding eye contact on the tube, unnoticed and completely unbothered. 1-0 Palace, FA Cup winners, and now, Neil, party crashers. Come on. Wonderful. Liverpool still nursing a title hangover. They hadn't even woken up yet. I think the Liverpool fans were thinking, this could be a bit of a long afternoon until we get that trophy lift. But also, I don't think they really cared either.
And also, Liverpool had done it quite often this season. They've gone one down quite a few times, and especially at Anfield, managed to claw it back. So I'm not sure anyone was that worried at that point.
No. But then things started to change a bit. Diaz had a couple of half chances, but it was mostly Palace. I mean, maybe I'm biased watching it, but it felt like Palace were probably the livelier of the two teams with the better chances.
Right.
Then Mitchell was up for it again. I told you, game of his life. He set up Mateta, who did find the net. But the assistant referee had his flag up quicker than Roy Hodgson standing to applaud a sideways pass. It was ridiculous. However, completely legit, it was offside.
Yeah.
But I still enjoyed the celebration. Shortly after that, Salah hunting a place in the Premier League record books nearly grabbed an assist. But England's number two, shortly number one, Dean Henderson, was having absolutely none of it. Huge save, part-time keeper, full-time show-off at the moment, to be honest. So that was the first half, really, in a few words. That meant that we were 1-0 up, obviously, at Anfield. And at that point, this is where you're probably going to enjoy this bit, Neil. I was sat on my sofa checking my phone for the league table, wondering one of two things.
Go on.
Are Palace still in 12th? Could we possibly have avoided the 12th place? So I was thinking to myself, how can I legitimately come into this podcast day, into the studio, still being in 12th? Because that's just going to be open for all sorts of abuse from you. So I was frantically searching BBC, refreshing the table, but no, still in 12th. and not out of 12 for the first time since Jesus was alive. I mean, it's just, it's bad. And the second thing that I was checking was, are Brighton still losing? And the answer was yes. So I was thinking to myself, even though we can't beat them, the other results are going in Palace's way. We could actually, we were sat quite comfortably actually in 10th at that point. And I'm thinking to myself, back-to-back top 10 finishes. So far, Neil, so good. Second half. Liverpool start to panic a bit and bring on Trent Alexander-Arnold to mass applause. Wait, hang on. Were we not booing him last week?
Nothing to say that football fans are fickle, eh? Suddenly Jurgen Klopp has a few words and everyone's changed their mind.
In it? I mean, did I miss the group chat where we decided that he was good again? I mean, unbelievable.
Thankfully they did, though. I'm pleased that they finally saw some sense.
I know. And in case anyone forgot how good he was, he pings a 60-yard pass straight into Nunez's laces. And again...
Lowe's early Black Friday deals are going fast. Don't miss up to 50% off select major appliances. Plus, up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. And with Christmas around the corner, you're going to need more string lights, right? Save $4 on GE LED 100-count string lights, now just $5.98. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Henderson, big block, still 1-0. Then Saar came again, this time with a thunderous volley. Alisson, not to be outdone, flies through the air and pushes it wide. So at this point in the game, two keepers currently locked in a who can be more heroic competition, in some kind of keeper off, as it were. Now, Glasner then decides, 1-0 up, let's take off Mateta and Eze. Why did you do that? Replacing them with Nketiah and Deveni. And then absolute chaos. Kamada was brought down at the halfway mark and Liverpool get a red card.
Mm.
Even with 10 men, unfortunately, it felt at that point, you would have thought, right, they go down to 10 men, Palace would have got momentum.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't kind of work like that.
It was strange. I was expecting that a little bit, especially with the way they play. You just thought they'd go for it, you know.
I think it was the embarrassment of losing on the cup lift day. I felt like they just thought, right, do you know what? We've got to do something now. So, yeah, even with 10 men, Liverpool continued to push up the field. And it did feel like I was sitting there watching it and it just felt like the inevitable was going to happen. But I've tuned myself not to think like that now. And I'm like, no. We don't do that anymore. We don't concede late goals. We keep the lead. Mm. Not this time. Finally, as I said, on the 84th minute, I think it was, the inevitable happened. Liverpool found the equaliser. Gakpo nods it down. Salah scissor kicks in goalward. And thanks to a deflection straight from football hell, it's in. 47 goal involvements this season. Salah now level with Shearer and Cole.
Yeah, newsflash, he's pretty good.
He is, isn't he? He is. And we all knew that. Now, late on, Nketiah, one of my favourite Palace players, as we know, had a golden chance to steal it for Palace. But his finish was, let's just say, more probably testimonial than top bins. It was flipping awful, Neil, is what it was. Now, I've dug out my pre-prepared Nketiah speech and we'll add this moment to this. Should we call it the Nketiah can do better speech? Which potentially we can dig out in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, absolutely. We've got plenty of time now. Could we have a little special feature all about Nketiah for you?
I think so. I mean, I had it ready, didn't I, for the Wolves game?
Yep.
And I put it on hold because he scored a brace and decided to turn up that day and not fall over the ball. But anyway, we'll do that later. Full time, Palace 1, Liverpool 1. Post-match, interesting. Because as a Palace fan, I look at that and go, hang on a minute, we just got a point at Anfield. Right?
Yeah, sure.
Against the champions.
Yeah.
Not life or death for us. Would have been nice if we could have finished a bit higher.
Right.
Looks better, attracting players in the top 10, all that kind of stuff. Mm. You know, all that. We've won the FA Cup, as I've mentioned before. 12th place, yes, but highest ever points total. Glasner in his post-match interview, did you see it? I'm not that you probably would watch it.
I didn't see it, but I read some of the quotes. He wasn't happy, was he?
Mate, far from it. He was talking about a lack of focus. And let me see if I can read some of this out.
Go on.
He said, I think today I have two feelings. I'm not really pleased with our performance today. A few players I didn't think play how we want to play, and I didn't like to see it. Not every player played for the team today. A bit too much individual.
So who do you think he was talking about?
Well, I've got a good idea. He hasn't mentioned any names, quite rightly, as you shouldn't. But I think it was Esse.
Right.
The kid we signed last year from Millwall, he had his kind of first start against Wolves when
we spoke
after the
about
FA Cup.
Him. Yeah. Okay.
He's the kid that danced through the players last week, just like Zaha would.
Yep.
He's that kind of player. We're talking kind of cage football style. And he has got a big, big future. So just for reference, not dissing him. However, he did lose the ball, which led to the goal. Mm. And I think that's what Glasner's mentioning. So this kid came on, I think like the 74th minute, somewhere around there. And he only lasted 14 minutes before he got subbed back off again in the 93rd minute.
Wow.
So I think there's an unwritten rule in football that if you get subbed on late on in the game, you're generally going to make it to the full whistle, right?
No player ever wants to be the sub that gets subbed off. That's the ultimate, isn't it?
This is a bit of a hard lesson for the youngster, I'm afraid. So, I mean, just for those of you who didn't see it, he took on two Liverpool defenders and won, which was, oh, hang on, he's going to do this again. Same thing he did last week. But then remembered he was taking on Liverpool defenders, Van Dijk and the rest, and lost the ball after he tries to take on the third. Now, the only issue was that when he lost that ball, they then counterattacked us, which led to the goal because we weren't expecting it at that late on.
Okay.
So some could blame him. I don't personally blame him because there was obviously plenty of things that could have happened.
Absolutely,
there.
Absolutely, yeah.
But he was definitely going for glory. I think also when you add to that the fact that Saar and Nketiah and Francer, who also came on later on in the game, all had moments where they went for the elaborate shot instead of the simple pass.
Yeah.
I feel like they were trying to, I don't know, they were trying to beef up their end of season montage reels or whatever, or get a final push for the goal of the season, as opposed to remembering they were 1-0 up at Anfield on the last day of the season. Maybe a bit too much confidence from the recent run of form. Anyway, look, for a game that we had the opportunity to get a top 10 spot, I can understand why Glasner was upset. I get it. And what this to me proves is that you can win an FA Cup, go 8 games, I believe it is, unbeaten, and get a point at the Champions away from home on the last day of the season, and he still wants more from his team.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's probably why he's so successful. Funny enough, he we'll talk about it later, hopefully, if you let me, the FA Cup parade and the party on the pitch and all that. But even in his speech on the pitch, he mentions, like, the Doc Brown, who was doing the presenting, asked Glasner how he was, and he brought it up again, even in the celebration party.
Really?
He said, not great after the Anfield game, but I've cheered up a bit now, or something along them lines.
Nice.
Referring to the fact that we should and could have done better, because I think probably the one word summary of that game was, we should have won it.
Yeah,
it's as simple as that. We should have won it, and we had more chances, more good chances than they did. Yes, they hit the woodwork a couple of times, things like as you'd expect, but we had enough to win that game. But there we go. We can't dwell on it. You won against Liverpool. We got a point out of them. It's not bad going at the end of the season, is it?
Point at Anfield is never bad news.
Nah, it's just I wanted three. I wanted three. But anyway, Leicester didn't win anyway. So that was all part of my miracle equation that needed to happen to get us up where I wanted us to be. But there we go. So Neil, look, we've talked about Palace's day out at Anfield. Let's have a chat about Tottenham Hotspur versus Brighton Hove Albion. What is your view on the game, Neil?
Oh, mate, it was actually a really good game to watch, especially if as a Brighton fan anyway, put it that way. I mean, obviously going into the game, we knew we had a few miracles, as we spoke about last week, to happen if anything was going to materialise along the European perspective. But to keep it simple, we needed at least a point to secure eighth place. That was the main thing that was going to happen today, one way or the other, because that was within our own power, at least. The lineups, yet again, I say it every week, it was a surprise again.
Yeah.
So, Gruder keeps his place. That's good news, right? He had a really good game against Liverpool. So, I was expecting that, obviously. Suddenly, you look down the starting 11, no Purvis Estupiñán at all. as in not even in the starting 11 or not even on the bench, totally missing. And if you remember last week...
Maybe they did that to give the commentators a day off.
No, do you remember last week when the game was on at Liverpool? Sorry, the game against Liverpool, I should say. Do you remember right at the end, the last like 30 seconds, Purvis runs up and takes a ridiculously stupid pot shot and it goes miles wide and Fabian Hürsler is going absolutely mental.
Oh, he went mad, didn't he?
Do you remember?
Like, too much so.
Well,
actually,
I think it was just born of frustration because we're trying to obviously blunt the game, win the game and keep control. And he does something like that. So he went absolutely mental. Maybe it was just as a coincidence, but suddenly
he got dropped.
He's not there at all. So, you know, I'm just saying. Without Purvis is one thing, but there was no Welbeck at all either.
Mm.
Remember, he's our only fit striker. Well, I say fit. We've got Pedro, but sounds like he's out as well at the moment. So for completely other reasons. So he limped off on Monday, Welbeck. So we weren't sure, but again, the press conference we had on Thursday, it was supposedly everything's fine, you know.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I've given up on press conferences.
There's no point you guys doing a press conference.
There's not.
Really.
I mean, there's no point because he does never tell the truth. So Hinshelwood and Gruder in the formation, we couldn't quite work out who was going to play where. Because if you remember at the end of the Liverpool game, Hinshelwood ended up as striker.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, like a false nine, I suppose. So anyway, we're trying to work out who was going to play where. Igor came in for Purvis, we knew that, but the rest of it was all a bit of a let's wait and see. Tottenham, I was expecting like the 12-year-olds to come out or something because all the others must have been hungover, seeing all their party that they had on the Friday afternoon and Friday evening. But actually, when it came down to it, there was only Romero that was missing from the starting 11 against the Europa League, in the Europa League. Son was missing as well, but then we knew he was injured and had been trying to rest anyway. So otherwise, pretty much full strength, which was a hell of a surprise to me. But in some respects, that worked in our favour, I think, overall, because we knew that they were going to be very tired come the second half of this game, and as it proved, really.
Mm.
The only thing that made me more surprised out of all the different starting 11 was probably seeing Brennan Johnson's name on the starting 11, mainly because I honestly thought he'd have about 3 weeks off. He was so... let's say, merry on the Friday. I don't know if you saw any of the pictures, but he was worse for wear, put it that way. So to see him actually starting on the pitch was quite a surprise. Anyway, I digress. Game starts. Formation does then start to become a little clearer. Albion in attack as such played with like a box midfield where they had like a 4-2, which is what they normally have, but then a 2-2. And what I mean by that is they have... so two defensive midfielders, two number 10s, and then the two wingers either side. So no one in that striking position. And you had the two 10s, which were Hinshelwood and Gruder, basically doing all the legwork, one of them dropping into that 9, one of them dropping back into 10, and the two wingers coming in from the side whenever there's a long ball over the top, which is basically how we got that first early chance. So literally on 2 minutes... I think it was Van Heck plays a long ball over the top. Minte makes a run in behind, cutting in from that left-hand side, gets ahead to it, knocks it down to a dangerous path, only really for him to shoot wide, scuffs it, basically. But it was a warning sign that actually, if Spurs try and push up like they normally do, these fast wingers have got something on them. And with no striker to mark, the central defenders were getting drawn into that midfield. So there's a huge hole back there. Anyway, look, enough talking tactics. They're boring to a lot of people. But it was quite an interesting formation to see. It's something that is quite a German formation, that one. Red Bull Leipzig used to play it. There's been quite a few which do this sort of 4-2-2-2. And it's a really interesting way of trying to beat the high press and trying to beat a really high line as well. So we may see more of that next season, but we can talk about that another time.
I like it though, it's exciting. I mean, a lot of running involved.
It is, but it's just very interesting to see a starting 11 without a striker on the pitch. It's a little strange, but
it seems to be the golden ticket, isn't it, in the Premier League, trying to find a striker on form.
Yeah.
So maybe just don't bother.
Absolutely. So anyway, look, the game poddled along quite well. It was very end-to-end. Spurs were up for it for a little while, at least. It got to about 15 minutes when really the first major incident of the game happened. Spurs were, well, they were attacking sort of more and more, and they were trying to press our midfield as we were for them as well. And their press this time paid dividend. They won the ball quite high up. Papa Mate Sarr plays the ball through to Tell inside the box. Mats Wiefer tries to catch up with him, but Tell sort of like cuts inside across him, and basically Wiefer clips him on the leg. He goes down as they all do now, like a pack of cards.
Yep.
And it is a pen. It's a very light one, but these days that's what a pen, that's what you get. You know, you get that decision for you. So no arguments really. Spurs hadn't really caused loads of issues, but they'd been quite pushy and quite making lots of pressing. So they get their penalty. Solanke steps up, puts it away. Spurs take the lead 1-0. And suddenly it's like, well, that seems a strange scoreline already, because actually we were pretty even up to then. I don't think they really created that many chances. The rest of the half is mainly sort of Albion pressure and possession. A couple of opportunities, but nothing major. Spurs are resorting to really just that one sort of the counter-attack where they possibly can just break, with their speed merchants that they've got on the pitch. There is one, I think it was around 40 minutes, where they counter-attack against from our corner. And it does take a fantastic stop from Verbruggen to get in there. From Matthias Tell again, who has another opportunity. But again, as I say, that first half was a relatively sort of nullifying from both ends from that perspective. We go in 1-0 down, and to be honest, in a strange way, I'm not that concerned at this point, because the game is relatively open and we haven't played badly. We just haven't created loads of chances. We just needed something to happen to sort of spark us into life maybe a little more.
And the thing that you're forgetting there is that you're playing Spurs.
The European champions, yeah.
Against Man United.
Yeah, so half time, I'm looking across the scores across the Premier League, just in case.
I bet you are.
And all I can see so far is, well, actually a lot of nothingness. Half time, there wasn't many goals anywhere, really.
It was a slow day, wasn't it?
I mean, yeah. The good thing was that Nottingham Forest Chelsea was 0-0. And I was like, okay, that's close, that's tight, that's good. The Villa one that I needed to happen to was 0-0. And I was thinking, okay, this is good. Didn't really look too far into it, because I was thought, I can't keep looking because it'll just send me crazy. Watch the Brighton game and just worry about it later. Nearer the time, if it's getting to that sort of squeaky bum time, then I might have a look. But so second half starts, and even before it starts, it's quite clear that Fabian Hertzler wasn't quite happy with what had happened in the first half. He makes a change. Well, actually, he makes two changes. So Ayari comes off, mm-hmm. and Diego Gomez comes on. Now, Diego Gomez is someone who we haven't really seen much of so far this season. He signed in January. Well, we signed him like ages ago, but he joined in January from the American League. And he's had little moments here and there, and he looks like a good player, to be fair. He does. He's lots of energy, lots of chasing around. We've been told before this that from the Paraguayans themselves that he's got a great shot on him, that he's a goal scorer, but we've not really seen much of that yet. He comes on from Ayari. He goes into the sort of that number 10 position that Jack Hinshelwood was playing, and Hinshelwood comes back down into the defensive midfield. So again, that's a straightforward change. Fair enough. We'll see how he does. Simon Adingra, thankfully, gets off the pitch, and Karu Mutoma comes on, and suddenly we've got our talisman back. You know what he's like.
For the time being.
Or at least another 45 minutes. That's what I was hoping. So he comes on, and obviously that changes the way that we play, because we have confidence suddenly in our left winger, as we do with our right winger. We have legs bursting through the centre. Gruder's trying to get on the ball. Diego Gomez is running past the defensive line constantly, really using all his energy he's got. And it just felt suddenly very different. You know, just immediately we looked so much more assured in possession. Even took more control of the game than we had in the first half. So our pressure creates chances after chance in that second half. Like literally 5 minutes into the half, we get a corner. It's whipped in into the box from Gruder. Webster gets ahead to it. It drops down. Don't know if you saw this, but Hinshelwood just quickly swivels, hits it into the roof of the net past Vicario, like a little goal hanger that he is. scoring his second goal in what, well, very close range, second goal in a week. One, obviously, he got the winner against Liverpool. Mm. Suddenly, he's got the equaliser at Spurs. And it felt right. And it also felt at that moment, there was only really going to be one result. Spurs try to rally a little bit. You know, the crowd gets at them a little bit. And
they're tired, Neil.
Well, exactly.
They're a bit tired.
They create maybe one good chance for the just about sober Brennan Johnson, and he puts it wide. And then that's it. Spurs give up.
They did. That's the way that I saw it when I looked at the highlights. They just gave up. Matoma changed the game, but then they gave up.
They gave up. We got on the ball. It gets to like the hour mark. Albion go up a gear and there's just no stopping them at that point. They don't care about what's happening elsewhere. They're just concentrating on playing some good football. There's players on the pitch that just want to get the ball. And it's a team of players that just want the ball and want to do something special with it. And it was a really lovely, great performance to watch. That's that last half an hour of the season, really. So we create a great chance for Minté close up. Vicario makes a fantastic save, though, this time. He's a really good keeper, I have to be honest. He puts it away for a corner, but that corner gets cleared out only for Belaiba to hit it, just the edge of the box. And I'm thinking, here we go, another one of those rockets from Belaiba. Annoyingly, it hits the post and just flicks back outside. So again, it's like, oh, that's annoying. But we get to like 63 minutes and we get another corner. This time, the ball comes in, it falls to Hinshelwood, to backheel Albion's second goal. Did you see it, Andy?
I'll be honest with you, I didn't. Oh, I didn't, because I just snoozed off watching Spurs.
It was a backheel. So the ball drops in the penalty box again.
Mm.
He's obviously not facing the goal. So all he thinks about is it just drops between his legs. He backheels it, beats the keeper, beats the defender, and he's running off again to celebrate with all the Brighton fans. Everyone's chasing after him. His second goal of the day, his third goal of the week. He's had 5 goals this season now. He's such a versatile player. I think he's becoming probably the most versatile player in the Premier League at the moment. If you think about...
That's a shout. Oof.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, he's played left back, right back. He's had a few minutes at centre back. He's played central defensive midfielder. He's played number 10. He's played false nine. He's played right wing. I mean, maybe get him some gloves and see what he's like next week.
I was going to say, is he versatile or does your manager just like shuffle in the pack? I mean, yeah, the poor bloke don't know where he's playing.
Well, there is an element of that. I think there's an element of, I hope at some point he settles down and plays a certain position just to get even better.
Mm.
But the levels that he's playing at now and doing what he's doing now, I'm surprised we've not ever really heard anything about another team watching him, or, you know, there's some suggestion that he might go here or there. I think because he's English, because he's a Brighton lad, there's almost this stigma that, oh no, he can't be that good. But he is that good at the moment. Anyway, look, okay. I digress. 2 goals in a game. He's having the week of his life in that sense. The rest of the game is played in the Spurs half, and we were excellent. Like, obviously Spurs flagged, as we all knew they probably would. They looked like a bunch of school kids on the last day of term just waiting for the bell to ring. You know what I mean? It was that.
Yeah.
Albion just really enjoyed themselves. They took control completely, created chances at will. I think they ended up with 23 shots. It was just one of those games that was completely relaxed for Albion in that last 30 minutes. Fast forward to 86 minutes. Now, by this time, O'Reilly was on for Gruder. Minté got the ball on the right-hand side as Gomez makes one of those really fast darting runs into the box, as I was talking about earlier. Minté plays that ball into Gomez's path, and Seagull old boy Bissouma makes a badly timed challenge to bring him down. Penalty to Albion.
Mm.
Now, at this point, I'm screaming at the TV saying, well, let Jack take it. He's on 2 goals. He could actually have a Premier League hat-trick before he's 21.
That would have been nice.
Wouldn't it?
That would have been nice.
So I'm, and I can hear all the fans in the ground also saying the same thing. Give the ball to Jack Lineker Hinshelwood and just let him complete his hat-trick, you know? He is interested in it. He does go over and they have a conversation himself. Gomez wants it as well because he's the one that was fouled. Matt O'Reilly steps up. Now, I presume they'd had some sort of agreement before the start of the game. I'm not sure though, because both of those, Gomez and O'Reilly, were subs, but we'll see. I'm sure it'll come out eventually. There wasn't, let's say, an argument, but at least there was a discussion on who should take it. Van Hecker comes over and pretty much pushes everyone out the way and says, O'Reilly, you're taking it. Matt O'Reilly steps up, puts it away. Albion's third, game's over. Now, by this point, the other games at Old Trafford and the City Ground are not going our way. And I know that our long shot at European football...
Long shot? That's an understatement.
Shut it, Andy.
It's like you're looking for a miracle like the loaves and the fishes back from the Bible days.
Our long shot at European football next season is effectively over. So...
Don't be upset, Neil. You've had your chance. It's someone else's now.
No, it was fine. I think, you know, as I say, I knew it was a long shot, but by about 75 minutes, it really didn't look like it was happening because of all the other results. So in some respects, I could relax, enjoy the game, and just see what happens for those last 5, 10, 15 minutes of the season and just enjoy. So Hörsler brings on James Milner. Remember him?
Oh, crikey. I didn't even know he was still going.
His first appearance since August.
Wow.
Now, this fact is not lost on Albion fans, who immediately start singing We Thought You Were Dead, which I thought was very funny. So time ticks on. Spurs looking to the ref to just blow the whistle. But one person really didn't want to finish the season without a goal. He tried to win a penalty. He tried to take the ball off the penalty taker. They weren't having any of it. But eventually, Mr. Gomez, 2 minutes into the 6 minutes of added time, steps up with an absolute pearler to close off the season in style. Left edge of the box, about 30 yards out, he curls a very powerful shot into the top right corner. It was a thing of beauty. It was so good, it left us all looking forward to this team and manager develop further next season. It really does. It just leaves you a little extra something at the end of the season. Because did you see that goal, Andy?
I actually did see that one.
Oh, finally.
I woke back up again on that one.
Good.
And you're right. There's no better way to end a season or a campaign than a moment like that. Just imagine if you were a Spurs fan, though.
As number four goes in. I don't know, I just get the feeling no one really wanted to be there for the game. They all wanted to be there for the bit after, didn't they?
Well, yeah, but how do you legitimately raise a cup in a stadium after getting beaten by Brighton after winning the European League? I mean, it makes no sense. It's been a mockery.
It's been such a strange season for Spurs, but I don't want to talk about them. I want to talk about Brighton.
And you have.
Thank you. So, yeah, look, you know, as I said, it left us feeling good. It left me looking forward to seeing the team develop more.
Yeah.
And I think also as a passing point, I've spoken a lot about Fabian Hörsler, and we will talk about him. We'll talk about Glasner. We'll talk about lots of things in the close season as we continue with Seagull Eagle through the close season. But one little point I just wanted to make before... About 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, we sat down here and we had that conversation about predictions, about what we thought was going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
And I appreciate, biasly thought Brighton would have a really good end to the season. And it was hope at the time.
You weren't far off though, mate.
I was very close. I was actually, Brighton did better than I thought. So they've, in their last five games, they got 13 points out of a possible 15. So they got 4 wins, 1 draw. And I was expecting 4 wins, or at least that's what I was hoping. Look, my point being that I was hoping for an end of season where the players would get into some sort of rhythm and I would start seeing some way of playing that I'd been struggling to see in the way that we'd been playing up until then. And what I mean by that is, Albion and Fabian Hörsler, I wasn't quite sure what our style was. What were we trying to do all the time? There were moments, but it was so fleeting, I was concerned.
Or even who your first team were.
All of that. You know, and we've had so many injuries, and that's not his fault, I get that. But still, I was always concerned about what exactly are we trying to do. And now, the thing that changed over the last five games, there's probably two or three things, and I won't go into them now, but I've talked about it before. One, there was a togetherness and a real desire to work hard as a team. And Palace, you know, have shown that as well this season, you know. And I think that's the absolute bare minimum in this league, is you have to work your absolute socks off and you have to come off that pitch with nothing left.
You're right, Neil, because I'm with you on that, mate, because they, look, let's be honest, hardly any Premier League clubs sign bad players, do they? So in terms of ability, it's all there. It's whether it gels and clicks and whether they're trying hard, isn't it?
It is that. And I think that was sometimes missing, I think, with this very young team. Mm. But the last five or six games has really shown me that there's players on that pitch, well, all of them, to be fair, that they gave everything in the last five games. And the other thing I would say is I've started to see tactically some things that Fabian Hürsler is doing now. And I'm here for it. I can see what he's trying to do. And I'm really excited about next season. Yes, it's a disappointment we didn't get European football. But as I said to you right at the beginning of the season, realistically, was I expecting European football? No, I wasn't. Not with a brand new manager who's never been in this league before, and the amount of new signings that we had. I was hopeful, of course. But realistically, where we are now is probably where we should be. You know, that's the league doesn't lie. We're in the top 10. We finish in eighth place. It's our second highest points tally ever. So in other words, 1 point off that. We've done everything we need to do to prove to people that we're a good side. Roll on next season.
Mate, I agree. I agree totally with you. And you look back to when we first started this podcast and you could not get a win. And as much as it amused me every week, I knew that it wouldn't be like that forever, because I think I looked at, as I say, when I watched that Liverpool game last week, you played very, very well.
Yeah.
And I looked at that and thought, if this can carry on over till next season, there's going to be some kind of celebration down in Brighton. I don't want it to happen, but I've got a feeling that you guys are going to be up to something next year if you can keep all your players, because you love selling them, don't you?
We've got all summer, mate, to talk about the players and who's staying and who's going, and yeah, you're right, there are always going to be a few. That's the club we are. We know we attract these great players because they know they're not going to get any hassle when they want to leave. And that's fair. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that personally, because I also have trust in the owners that there'll be another one along in a minute. So
absolutely.
That's fine. And it is just the way it is with the club that we are. What I would say is ultimately this season's biggest problems have been not with the bigger teams that we're playing. You know, we've beaten Man City, we've beaten Liverpool, we've beaten Arsenal. We drew with Arsenal. We've, you know, beaten Tottenham, we've beaten Man United.
Oh, no, you haven't, have you? Sorry.
We've beaten Chelsea. So the bigger teams, he says in quote marks, we have beaten. It's those smaller teams, those teams that sit behind the ball, a la the bottom three, but also teams like Palace as well, Nottingham Forest, that really are compact and don't let us in, that we've had huge problems against this season. That is the homework for the close season.
Yeah, you're right. I think you've had a very good season, and I think you hit the nail on the head. And it's pretty much the same for Palace, Neil, which is, I think we probably got what we deserved out of that in terms of a Premier League campaign.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We didn't win a game for 8 or 9 games or whatever, sure, at the start. How the hell can you expect any more than 12th, yeah, when you don't win, yeah, up until Christmas?
Like, yeah.
So, and for you guys, you had that horrible slump in the middle bit. So I think, look, I think we both got out of it what we deserve. I know we shouldn't celebrate this, but I still feel we should. We're both still Premier League teams who are doing decent and have got a launch pad now for next year to go and do wonderful things. So, I mean, the day that one of us gets relegated, the day this podcast goes to pot. So at least we're still back in the league next year.
Oh, look, listen, mate, if it happens next season and Palace go down, I'm here for it. Don't worry.
Well, I probably won't be, mate. You'd be doing a podcast on your own.
Right, that's the end of part one. See you in a mo.
Welcome back, everybody, to Seagull Eagle podcast. Right, Neil, now is the time. Let's have a chat about the FA Cup victory.
No, Andy, we haven't got time for that now. We need to talk about the rest of the Premier League results on the last weekend of the season, all right?
Neil, you're killing me, man.
We'll get to it at some point, mate.
Okay, all right. Well, in that case then,
I don't think we're going to talk through all of the results.
Oh, God, no. God, blimey.
Because a lot of it didn't actually matter, truthfully, at the end of the league. So I think probably, should we start off with the Forest-Chelsea game, Neil?
Yeah, unfortunately. Nottingham Forest 0, Chelsea 1.
God, that really hurt to say that, didn't it?
No, it's fine. As I said to you in part one, I sort of given up a while ago. I was hoping, but realistically, to be honest, I think the thing in that game or in that result that probably rung true more than anything else was just that Nottingham Forest have just completely run out of steam, haven't they?
I mean, I'd go as far as say collapsed.
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. I mean, they had a few injuries here or there. But ultimately, if you look at their form, I did a little squiz at the old table earlier today. And if you look at their form since the 1st of April, which is basically 9 games. Never don't forget, they're supposedly going for Champions League. I mean, in January, some people were talking about the title, if you remember. Some idiot.
Yeah.
So they've played 9 games since the 1st of April in the league. They've won 3. Drawn 2, lost 4. So 11 points out of 9 games. I mean, that's terrible, isn't it?
Do you think that FA Cup loss would have hit them? Not from us.
How do you constantly bring it back to the FA Cup?
Well, no, because I feel like when they played that game, I don't feel like they kind of played with the same level of confidence since then. But maybe it's just
no,
me.
To be fair, that's actually a really good shout. That's a good shout because I think it was only a week or so before that they'd beaten Man City, hadn't they, in the league. Yeah. It's a very good shout, actually.
It just felt a bit like after that, it just wasn't, they weren't cooking on the same gas that they were cooking on before. I don't know whether that was the turning point or whatever and the disappointment or fact that they really saw that as their opportunity to actually win something because they had the momentum. They were doing well in the league. They were in the cup semis.
Yeah.
You know, I feel it goes one or two ways after that kind of moment, doesn't it?
I agree. I think the other thing that probably happened when it got to sort of March, April time, is that pressure turned up. Suddenly they weren't just the plucky team that was supposed to be relegated, but just having a great season. They were at this point, suddenly the team that, could get Champions League. And they're in third. They're in second. Could they win the title? Or it suddenly then changed to, well, I hope they don't drop out now. I mean, they've been in such a good position. It would be a shame for them to drop out. And you know, the narrative changed. Pressure maybe got to them. Yes, they look tired as well, but you know, pressure's a big thing. That's why the big teams win the titles. Oh no, don't say it. I've just realised what I said. Don't.
Thank you very much, Neil. So, do you know what? Also, though, we were just having a chat about Palace and Brighton, quite obviously on this podcast, and how we both, even though it pains me to say it, feel like we probably got what we deserved out of the Premier League season this year, given how we played and you know, yes, from a Palace perspective, if you look at our form, we should have done better than 12th, but we had that horrible start, right?
Yeah.
But for Forest, when you look at it, I mean, surely they were overachieving from the offset.
Oh, right? Oh, absolutely. I mean, I actually thought they were relegation.
Me too.
I honestly thought they'd be 17th, 18th, somewhere there, in the battle for relegation.
And that's why the manager's obviously got, you know, the recognition that he, you know, deserves, I guess, because of the fact that he's taken a club that should have been and everyone thought were potentially going down. And, you know, there were a lot of worse clubs in the end than them. But I think he's done wonderful things with them, but the longevity of it.
Oh, mate, I'm here for it. One season wonder, that's my bet.
Do you reckon?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm absolutely sick. I mean, obviously, they're going to have to strengthen their squad because they're in Europe now next season. But I just can't see it happening. I honestly think they'll go back to type next season. I think they will be lower half, let's say.
Really?
The problem I've got is I used to be able to say, oh, I think this team will go down or this team will go down. I think we're getting to a point now, and this is for another time discussion, but we're getting to a time now where the teams that are coming up have got so much against them that it's very difficult to bet against them going straight back down every time that the new teams come up. So when I'm talking about Nottingham Forest possibly being in the bottom half, normally I'd be saying, oh, they're probably going to go down, but I don't know now. But at least, I suppose, is my point that if they've got European football, the way, the type of way that they play, I just can't see it happening next season. I think they've been found out, and I think other teams will not let them do what they've been doing this season. Let's move on. Chelsea, congratulations to them, begrudgingly, but they, you know, they came good at the end of the season, and their form in the last five games, they lost one but won four. You know, when it mattered, they came good. So congratulations to them.
Well, let's move on to the next game then. Man U 2, Villa 0.
I know, the shock and awe of it. Well, wow. Did you see this game? Did you see bits?
I saw the highlights.
Right, okay. I mean, this was such a strange game in that it all really centred around two decisions.
Yeah.
It was a really tight affair, first of all. Boring, some would say. 0-0. I mean, Villa only needed a point, don't forget. So yeah, they went into this, I think, fairly comfortable. They'd had all week to prepare. So they were in fine fettle, I'm sure, trying to go there thinking, all we need is a point at Old Trafford, which, to be fair to everyone else, has got more than a point there most of the season. So
it's not the fortress it used to be.
It's not, is it? So I was expecting, I think I even said it last week, Villa 2-3-0. I mean, especially after Man United's performance in the week, I just was expecting, you know, a real walkover. It wasn't like that. In fact, the biggest moment, probably the moment that changed the whole game, really, was Martinez's red card. Did you see it?
Yeah. Yeah.
What was that guy on? What a ridiculous decision. That's probably his last game as well. I think that's pretty much, he's off now after that. So he's left them with that. There was a little part of me that just thought, has he done that on purpose?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? He might have.
Do you know what I mean?
He might have.
Like, his parting gift, because they don't want him anymore, is to... Mm. But yeah, terrible decision, runs out. He's not even hiding the fact that he's made a wrong decision. Takes out the striker, red card straight away. Fair enough.
He knew what he'd done.
Absolutely.
He knew what he'd done. And then there's the bit where the ref blows the whistle too early. Go on, tell us about that.
Oh, so this is all over the news now because Villa, they've made a complaint to PGMO. Well, they've actually made the complaint to the Premier League, I think.
What good does that do, though?
I don't know.
They're not
going
to change the score, are they?
Well, no, I find it... I think it's probably to do with money, ultimately. I think, you know, you think that... Well, look, let's go bit by bit. Let's at least explain what happened first. So Morgan Rogers chases down a ball, goes back to the Man United keeper. I say keeper because it was Bayindir. It wasn't actually Onana. Mm. He was dropped already. And Bayindir goes to pick it up. And as he goes to pick it up, Morgan Rogers gets there as well. And I sort of get it that maybe from a distance it might have looked like the keeper had it in his hands.
He didn't, though.
He didn't. Absolutely right.
And I've seen it in a million different angles.
Yeah.
And he didn't.
He was not in control of that ball in any way, in my opinion.
It had a wicked little bounce on it, though. That's why.
It did, it did. But, you know, Morgan Rogers got there anyway. So the ball sort of dribbles out really quickly. Morgan Rogers sees it, swivels, kicks it into the goal. And I didn't understand what had happened for the first 20 seconds after that because I sincerely just thought it was a goal. And then I thought, oh, no, he's kicked it out of his hands. Then I saw the replay and I was like, oh, no, he hasn't. It's okay. It's a goal. But everything that had happened after Morgan Rogers made that tackle was null and void because apparently the referee had blown his whistle at that moment.
Thinking the keeper had picked it up and it was not a goal-scoring opportunity or anything.
Well, so this is the argument, and this is Aston Villa's argument, and I understand it, that we are in an age now where I've been moaning for the last 5 weeks about how much referees rely on VAR, so don't make decisions. This referee went the other way. He saw a situation happening and blew his whistle early and didn't let it play out. So suddenly he's blown the whistle, the game stopped. So VAR now can't get involved.
Yeah.
Did you see Emery on the line?
Yeah.
He was going absolutely mental, up and down, shouting at the ref, shouting at the third official. I mean, it was just, I mean, it was funny. In some respects, it was funny as a completely outsider. But I do understand the stress of it. And yeah, so Villa have been really upset about that.
What? Right. Here's the bit that I don't get.
Go on.
Maybe I've completely misunderstood this. Man, you would... 2-0 up at that point, right?
1-0 up.
Oh, they were 1-0 up.
This is the point. So this happens, and then literally like a 30 seconds later, they go down the other end and score.
Right.
So this is from Emery's perspective. And don't forget, they need a draw. So they're down to 10 men.
They're keeping
it tight. They're hoping for the odd chance to score a goal to equalise. It happens. It materialises.
Mm.
From Emery's point of view, they've made a horrendous error. And then they start play again. And they go up the other end and score. Game's over. You know, it's...
I apologise for my naivety there, Neil.
It's fine.
Just like in the Tottenham games, I tend to switch off when it comes to... You know, see that Man United logo pop up on Match of the Day? That's when I go and make a cup of tea or something. So.
Yeah. Look, bottom line is Man United won 2-0, but that wasn't really the story. The story was referee making, in my opinion, a huge error of judgment. However, those things happen in the game. And however much we want VAR to take over and make every decision correct as much as possible, it's just another indicator that these things do happen and they do even out. The amount of luck, in my opinion, that Villa have had all season, sometimes things are going to go against you. It's just so happens that it goes against you in the last game when it means so much. And going back to my point right at the beginning of this, which was about Aston Villa making a complaint to the Premier League, I think ultimately their biggest reason for doing that is that they aren't particularly on the safest of the financial tightropes at the moment. You know, they're close to the line again. This is why so many of their purchases at Christmas were loans. They're a little bit on the fine line when it comes to finances. So by getting into the Champions League would have made a hell of a difference to them for a second season in a row. So we'll have to see what happens with that. I can't imagine anything will, but they have made a complaint. So we'll keep you posted on that one when we hear more.
Interesting. And then I think the final match that really mattered was the Newcastle-Everton game, which I think finished Newcastle 0, Everton 1.
I mean,
what a strange result again.
Unbelievable. Another one of those last game of the season sort of results that I definitely didn't see this coming. Newcastle needed at least a point or something to qualify for the Champions League, we thought, because they would have to rely on other results otherwise. So I was thinking, oh, Newcastle will go out. They're at home, last day of the season. They've won their cup. They've been on a great form recently. They're going to just go down there and do what they normally do, steamroll the opposition, get two or three up and enjoy the day. Everton had a different opinion on that one. They
had nothing to play for either, did they? Right? So they literally just turned up to ruin their day.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you look at Everton overall, we spoke about them a few times, but the best thing I can say is David Moyes taking over. I looked at the table today and I took the table from the date that Moyes took over.
Yeah.
Do you know, if the season had started when Moyes took over, they would be ninth in the table.
That is interesting, isn't it?
So they've only actually had four losses since Moyes took over. Talk about a turnaround. When you look at clean sheets as well, and this is obviously also thanks to their previous manager, but they've had 12 clean sheets this season, which meant that Jordan Pickford, with this result on the last day, became second in the Golden Glove Award for the season. So for a team like Everton to have that many clean sheets, I thought that was fantastic, really, from that point of view. And just on that, by the way, the Golden Glove Award, which is obviously goes to the goalkeeper with the most clean sheets, the reward was actually shared this season on the last day by David Raya of Arsenal and Matt Sells from Nottingham Forest as well. So congratulations to them. But yeah, the Newcastle-Everton game, I didn't see that coming. So it did leave Newcastle at the final whistle wondering what the hell had happened and where their European football would be played next season.
Mm.
Ultimately, because of other results going their way and Villa not winning and things like that, obviously with Nottingham Forest and Villa not winning, it meant that they were safe. They did actually manage to finish off in fifth position, the final Champions League spot. So
wasn't the most exciting of final days, was it?
No. And I think that goes back to the point around the quality of the teams that came up. I think that really, you know, usually there's that battle at the end, last ditch for trying to survive, but that didn't happen this season. But yeah, Southampton, they finished last. Ipswich closely behind them. I say closely, they did 10 points better on 22 points. 18th, Leicester, 25 points. And then, as we know, Man United with their last ditch 3 points on the last day of the season, managed to hoik themselves up to the mighty 15th position, which meant that Tottenham dragged the rest of the league up on 38 points. So 38 games, 38 points for Tottenham Hotspur, the European champions.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Wolves, 42 points. Man United, 42. West Ham in 14th. Everton up to 13th. Let me see who's 12th. Can't
the
quite.
FA Cup winners.
Yeah, that's right. So Crystal Palace were in 12th. What a surprise.
Feb, do you know what, though? What? Got 6 points off of you, though, so that helped.
Oh, it did help. Yeah, absolutely. You're welcome. You know.
Yeah.
11th, Fulham. 10th, making to the top 10, Brentford. Bournemouth, with their last day win against Leicester, wicked up to 9th position. And then Brighton, as I said to you, 8th position, 61 points, second best scores ever. If you think about that as well, the Brighton 61 points, our best ever was 62. Mm. But 62 points this season would still put us in 8th.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, isn't it, where how much they fluctuate the different points. And as you said last week, I think, the reason that the top teams have got so many points is because the bottom end was so bad.
So bad. So bad.
There were no real surprises at
all.
And that,
you know, like, the difference in that bit from, like, what, 8th down, like, a couple of weeks ago, it made a big difference, didn't it, with that, you know, like, that you get 3 points here, 3 points there, even just by the fact that Palace could have ended up in 9th if a few results could have gone their way from 12th. You think about how much one position is worth in that Premier League.
Yeah.
You can see why Glasner and Steve Parrish weren't very happy that you know, we didn't get that win. It's a really interesting thing. And I guess that was the only exciting thing, really, for me that happened on that last day, which is, can we end up in the top half? But unfortunately, this year, we can't. Next year, mark my words, Palace fans, we will be in the top 10 next year.
Wow. Okay. I'm gonna keep this on a recording.
Do it.
Oh, it's okay. We are recording it. It's good news. Just another point on Brighton finishing 8th, as we're talking about our teams. One thing I did notice as well is when you look at the overall stats for the season. So Brighton only actually lost 9 times this season, which is the second least number of losses this season. So Liverpool and Arsenal lost 4 times this season. So Man City, Chelsea and Brighton lost 9th. Times. So I just thought that was quite interesting that we'd had a spell in the sort of the middle of the season where we just kept drawing and drawing but not losing, picking up the odd point, you know, which was frustrating at the time, but ultimately when you look at it overall, it's not bad to only lose 9 times in the whole season.
Not at all.
As we know, Liverpool were champions. They will be playing Champions League along with Arsenal, Manchester City, Chelsea and Newcastle in 5th. Which meant that Aston Villa's loss puts them in the Europa League along with... Oh, who was the other team that got the Europa League this season?
I'm not going to help you with that one. Can I just say also, Man City, with the comeback that they've had...
Yep,
that's another interesting factor because a lot of people would have written them off to finish where they did.
Yeah, so. Last 5 games, 4 wins, 1 draw... exactly the same form as Brighton over Albion. Anyway, so that's the end of the table. It's overall, I think we've got, you know, the summer to talk about how the season went generally. But I think you made the point really clear there, though, Andy. It wasn't particularly exciting the last day of the season, but we are where we are. Brighton in 8th, Palace in 12th. Yeah, that's just normal service has resumed.
Well, I don't know. We were above you last year. But anyway. Is it time, Neil? Can I talk about the FA Cup parade now?
Go on then, I'll make myself a coffee.
Stop being the fun police. Come on.
Go on then.
Right, Palace fans, listen up. Brighton fans, maybe do make yourself a cup of tea just for 2 minutes. Just want to have a little chat about the FA Cup parade because it was a big deal, right? And for a change, managed to get my whole family up there this time, not just me and the boy. We rolled into London dressed like a walking club shop. Flags, face paint, full kit. No, actually, I didn't wear my socks. And yes, those criminally underrated bucket hats made a comeback from Wembley. First stop when we got up there, we went to the club shop, of course, and had to get the winner's 25 in gold on the back of my shirt.
Oh, my God.
And my daughter's shirt. We got that done as well. And the FA Cup winner's logo on the front as well, in the middle of the chest. Bold, a little bit braggy, but officially iconic, Neil.
I'd be doing the same thing, mate.
I know you would. I know you would. So we made our way to the parade route, right? Buzzing with caffeine and pride, because I drove again, so coffee got me through this. Still thinking, truthfully, as I'm stood there on the parade route, walking with the fans, flag sellers on the street and people selling winners T-shirts and all this kind of stuff, it didn't feel real. It just didn't feel real, right? Normally, when I'm that side of the stadium, which is, in essence, the away fans bit, I'm normally, you know, all you can hear is the odd brave away fan starting a chant and all that. And the most exciting thing you get around that neck of the woods is walking past the Chinese restaurant, smelling the bao buns or something. So for us to be lining up outside this little parade of shops and all of these kind of reasonably tight streets was just, it was unreal to be there in that situation. Coming from a man who was taking his two children and his partner along, and I was like, oh, is this okay? Because narrow streets in South London, lots of people, keen as a cucumber to, you know, get involved and flare. We know how much we love a flare and a pyrotechnic and all that kind of stuff. I was just a little bit worried about overcrowding, actually, because of the short parade route, whereas the likes of Tottenham and stuff, they did like
10 miles.
Exactly. And I think ours would, I mean, I don't know how long it was, but I think it would be pushed to be a mile, to be honest with you.
Okay.
So I didn't have to worry about that. It was
like four people there?
No, far from it, mate. There was lots of people, but they were spread out well.
Yeah.
And it was organised brilliantly. And big shout out to the stewards and the police and everybody. They did exactly what they should have done and what the guys at Wembley did actually as well, which is they policed it with humour and with fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And therefore had no trouble, right?
Good.
They weren't looking for problems and they didn't find them apart from the old confiscated flare. But that was okay. So yeah, it was great. It was a really, really fun day. Everyone was buzzing. We took our positions by the half away, which is the away stand for most people who would know that.
Okay.
And we stood there so long waiting that my Winners 25 brand new shirt nearly became a vintage collector's item. It felt like forever. Probably more specifically because I had my two children with me, trying to keep them occupied while we were waiting. And we took the position there and true to form, boom, but not one bus turned up, but two, right? Just like when you're waiting for a bus on the way home. Absolutely packed with Palace legends, of course, and about 400 litres of Prosecco being drunk by the bottle. They were all hammered, Neil, absolutely hammered. And it's really funny because you normally see these players in their peak physical fitness, sports kit and, you know, nice combed back hair and all this kind of stuff. They were in, you know, a lot of them were in like comedy bucket hats and Mateta had his big boom glasses on, which are brilliant with the word, you know, the comic word boom, which is his thing. They were all very kind of, they played their characters really well. And there was not often that you see your legends and icons of the club absolutely hammered. And I think as the bus came past us, Will Hughes was downing a bottle of champagne to the excitement of all of his fellow teammates. So there we go. So that was that one. The atmosphere was electric. Streets ran with everyone from toddlers on shoulders to granddads on actual lampposts. Not a hint of trouble, as I said, just pure joy and the odd dangerously wobbly fence. So that was wonderful. As the bus rolled past, we legged it into Selhurst Park because we were one of the lucky few, and I'm really sorry for anyone listening that didn't manage to get in, but we were one of the few that managed to get into the party on the pitch. And it said party on the pitch. And it's really funny because when I was speaking to the family about this and they were like, we get to go on the pitch. And I was like, you ain't going to see any grass on that pitch. They'll put the plastic covering down for the festivals and all that kind of stuff. No, they didn't.
We were
on the actual pitch. And I remember like walking on expecting it to not look like Selhurst Park with no markings, nothing. And we literally went into the away bit, which is something you never end up doing anyway in your own club.
Yeah.
Went into the away bit. The Wolves badge was still up there from the last home game. Bought a coffee and some crisps or whatever for the kids from the away little kiosk with all of the home fans going, the pints are cheaper in the away section. Why is that? Which is funny. That seemed to be the thing that annoyed everybody. And then walked down a bit that you're not allowed to walk down, right? Mm. We got given on the way in a silver festival band which said, Neil, pitch access.
Honestly, everyone, if you could see Andy's face, it looks like, it's like Christmas to him. I can just see his little face lighting up.
Pitch access in like a premium band. I like begrudgingly cut it off yesterday. My son still got his on. So we went down there and literally set foot onto the actual pitch. Mm. And I honestly, it was phenomenal. A childhood dream unlocked. And that sounds stupid, but to be able to actually go on the Selhurst Park pitch was, yeah, it was a dream actually of mine come true.
Sure.
And I'll carry on and tell you a little bit more about that later as to some of the things that we recreated on that pitch. Anyway, for those of you who weren't there, live music, food stalls, beer on the pitch was another little thing that everyone could do. You could take a beer and not just stand at the back against the wall at half time. You literally took it straight into the stands, into the pitch. It was lovely. Everyone was kind of having a great party atmosphere. And then on came the players strutting through the fan-lined walkway. So if you can imagine, at the halfway line, they created two festival barriers to create like a walkway from what in essence would be the director's box in the main stand. So they come up through the director's box, walk down through onto the main pitch, all the way through the halfway line and onto the stage.
Right.
So they'd really kind of thought about it. And as they strutted through the fan-lined walkway, and just like a Palace counterattack, the high fives came thick and fast. Fast, joyous, and slightly chaotic, the players came out. And I got this impression from them, Neil, that they didn't want to engage too much with some of the fans, because I feel like they were concentrating on putting one foot in front of the other in some instances as well. But they were really friendly with it, and it kind of gave us a little bit of an insight into what their characters are like that you don't normally get to see, which was lovely. So then Glasner spoke and the entire stadium paused to listen. Even the kids pretending to be Mateta stopped kicking the Coke bottles to take note of the boss doing his speech. It was lovely to listen to his thoughts and the fact that I think the thing that I took away from that speech was actually he's not going anywhere and also he ain't done yet.
Really? It felt like that, did it?
100%.
Yeah. I mean, 100%. If you've got European football, you can just imagine he'll be at least one more season because he's got the opportunity to win something again.
He ain't going nowhere. He's certainly not going Tottenham, I'll tell you that now. So then what they did was obviously you guys had your end of season awards a couple of weeks ago, didn't you?
That's right, yeah.
What they did was instead of hire out the Fairfield Halls in Croydon, which they normally would have done, they decided to combine these two events into one, which was quite nice. So Doc Brown, who's a big Palace fan and kind of presenter and rapper and all the other things, and also somebody else, together they presented this and made a really special moment, actually, a really unique moment where the fans in their droves and in their volume can participate in the success of these players over the season. So it was a really, really nice event. Mm. And of course, with the stadium came all of the theatre, the big screens, the fireworks, the pyrotechnics that goes with all of these awards. So it kind of felt quite big. It felt quite nice. So Henderson accepted the award on behalf of the team for the moment of the season. Can you think what the moment of the season might have been, Neil?
No, okay, I know what it was.
What, the winning back-to-back wins at Brighton? No, it wasn't. It was the FA Cup winning moment at Wembley. So Henderson quite rightly accepted the award for that. And this was my favourite moment of the day. And my children loved this one too, which was Henderson celebrated by singing and encouraging the entire stadium to sing his very own version of Shakira's Waka Waka, which has become a favourite fan favourite after he was filmed singing it in Box Park, absolutely steaming off his face after the win. So it goes, and this is why I thought of you, Neil, because it goes something a little bit like, you know, and then it goes, 12th again, who gives up? We won the FA Cup. Da, 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 da. And every time they sing that,
It reminds me of you, Neil.
Fair play.
So even our goalkeeper, number two goalkeeper England, jokes about the fact that we keep ending up in 12. But who cares? We won the FA Cup. Anyway, Munoz cleared up. He won player of the season and player's player on his birthday.
Oh, really?
We all sang happy birthday to him.
How old is he?
He's 29.
Blimey.
He's 29.
That's older than I thought he was, actually.
Yeah, well, he started late.
What do you mean?
Well, he didn't kind of do what you would traditionally think the footballers do these days.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
He kind of hit the big time quite late on in his career. Okay. Maybe it's actually quite a nice story, maybe for another day.
Yeah, okay.
we can feature him and
I'll
talk about
that.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so he cleared up. He got player's player and also player of the season, and quite right too.
Mm.
His impact since he's come to this club has been second to none, and we are very lucky to have him. He's just signed a new contract, and I believe he's made it into most people's Premier League team of the season, actually, in his position there. So aren't we lucky to have that guy, and very well loved as well. Mateta won goal of the season for that chip against Arsenal. I don't know if you remember that one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, lovely goal.
He came on, saw the keeper, and lobbed him into the Stone Age. It was a wonderful, wonderful goal. I think he'd only been on the pitch for a matter of minutes when he did that as well, which made it even more special. And watching the goal of the season montage on all of these big screens in the thing, it was a lovely moment actually, because what I loved about it was they didn't just include the first team in that. They included all of the development teams, the under-21s, the under-18s, the women's teams at all ages. And it just showed you the talent that is at the club.
Sure.
And some of the kids that are coming through, both men and women, they're gonna have big futures. And there's some wonderful, wonderful goals. and then, of course, trophy lift time again. I mean, they are milking it a little bit now, because we did this at the end of the match. We did it anyway. Anyway, we'll move on. So, but this time we had fireworks, pyros, confetti cannons, smoke bombs. Oh, it looked like New Year's Eve met Glastonbury, and it was all red and blue. It was wonderful. Then, of course, that wasn't enough for us, because they did that thing where they put a DJ back on, and it was like, you know, if you'd like to make your way out. And I looked at the family, I was like, I don't think I want to make my way out. I'm on the Selhurst Park pitch. I feel like an 8-year-old child right now. I'm going to make the most of this. So we pursued in reenacting iconic moments on that pitch just so we could say we did it, right? So I kicked the non-existent corner flag, Mateta style.
Nice.
I think some of the stewards who clearly don't understand Crystal Palace were wondering what was going on. I think they thought, one of them thought I was coming at them, actually. but that's okay. And then, of course, we played keepy uppies and 1-2s with the kids with a half flat Coke bottle. Just to say that we've now played football on the same pitch as the greats. Not many people can say that, can they? I genuinely just pretended like we were 8 years old, playing on the pitch at Selhurst Park. I think, Fuller, final verdict for me, I will stop wanging on about this now, Neil, I promise, but it's been an epic couple of weeks, one that I didn't ever think I would kind of get a chance to see. The fact that I've been able to take the family there as well, thank you, Crystal Palace. Genuinely lovely, lovely day out. You got loads of criticism about what you were planning to do and what you could do. And I understand that party was for the few and not the many. And I think that's a learning for the future, which is, how do you make it more accessible, not just for the season ticket holders and the members that managed to clamber their way to sign up when we started doing well. I think we need to have a look at how we do it for the future. But thank you for a wonderful day out, for the scarves that you dished out to everybody on the free, the flags, the all the other bits and pieces that you did to create that moment that we won't forget that. My son will never forget going on the pitch.
Of course.
So it was a wonderful day and a wonderful end to what was a brilliant season. So there we go, Neil. That was all about my day out. Now I can stop asking. I don't know if you can hear the rustling in the background.
Oh, here we go.
But I've got, for those of you who saw it on television, my daughter managed to collect a vast amount of the gold winners confetti cannon stuff as it fired up about a mile up into the air.
And you decided to bring it to my house.
Well, I thought I'd give it to you as a gift, Neil, so that you can look at this and always remember the Palace great day.
Remember. Trust me, mate, I will never forget. It's very difficult to forget with you in my house.
Brilliant. There we go. Should we move on just for your sake?
Oh, please.
Okay. What else has been going on this week then, Neil?
Well, it's probably worth congratulating the third and final team to get a place in the Premier League for next season. So congratulations to Sunderland, who make it back to the promised land. Last time they were here, I think they were relegated in 2017. So, yeah, fantastic result for them in the playoff final at Wembley this weekend. I don't know if you saw the winning goal.
They left it late, didn't they?
They did. 95th minute. 19-year-old Tommy Watson, beautiful winner at the end, sent the Mackens absolutely wild. It was a beautiful shot. Like, he's clearly a very skillful, quick sort of like left winger. Huge potential, a lot of people are saying about him. I might see a few teams in the summer try and, you know, get him to come to the... hang on. Oh, that's right. Brighton of Albion have already bought him.
Have you actually?
Yeah, yeah. We tried in the January transfer window. We've finally got an agreement about March time. It was communicated. So, yeah, we've got him for about 10 million. He's already a Brighton and Hove Albion player, or at least will be from the 1st of June. So, thank you very much.
Wow.
Brighton yet again doing the business. What else are we going to talk about? Oh, actually, there was something just to highlight the fact that the circus is just about to start. That is the transfer window.
Love it, Neil. I love it.
Do you?
Oh, I just every single day going onto Google, typing your club's name and then going to the news bit, sort by date. That is my morning ritual. Love
it. Do you know what? I get RSI, I do, from, you know, refreshing Twitter every 5 minutes during this time of the year, but mainly because there's nothing else going on. But it is a bit of an addiction, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Just keep looking at stuff like that. So yeah, the transfer window as such opens on the 1st of June. All the way to the normal window, which this year is the 1st of September. And one other slight point on that, which is really good news, is that 1st of September deadline is now the same for the whole of Europe.
Wow.
So it's finally been changed and agreed across the whole of Europe. Yeah. So everyone will finish. I can't remember exactly what time. I think it might be 5 p.m. or something. But
oh, it's an earlier one.
It's not even a late night one. Yeah, because of European times across Europe and stuff. So
no more sitting there watching the countdown clock until 11 o'clock.
Well, you can, but it won't be too late. Yeah. I think you're still going to have that scenario where it gets to a certain moment and there's going to be those deal papers gone into the Premier League for the last
minute. We've got a deal.
Yeah, exactly. What was that?
I've no idea, mate.
So yeah, anyway, look, 1st of September it does finish, but good news is it's the same for everyone across Europe, so we don't have to wait for any dodgy either Turkish teams trying to nick our players come 2nd of September.
Got one more thing I want to talk about.
Oh, go on then.
Right, I know quite a few Brighton fans, unfortunately, right?
Because how very dare you.
Well, it's true. Obviously, living down near Worthing Way, being a Palace fan, I'm reasonably well known amongst my group of friends for supporting Crystal Palace because I don't try and hide it, right?
So I've noticed.
Exactly. So therefore, since the FA Cup, a lot of them have begrudgingly said to me, congratulations or well done, which I found quite weird. And my family have found quite weird because they're like, why are they congratulating you? You've done nothing, Andy. You've just supported a club. And I'm like, get it. Now, that has now turned from begrudgingly congratulating me and walking away very quickly or continuing their day to, yeah, but Andy, you're not actually going to end up in the Europa League. You know that, don't you? Because you're going to get disqualified. And I'm like, right. So how is it that no one in the world believes that that's going to happen apart from the Brighton fans that I know? Yeah. And it happened to me. I was at my son's football tournament on Sunday, hence my burnt forehead, being out in that sun all Sunday. And four or five people came up to me and said the same thing. So I thought, what better way to talk about this myth that the Brighton fans have seemed to have worked themselves into a frenzy about than on this platform?
Well,
right,
like most rumours, it comes about through a slight element of truth. But that's about it, isn't it, really?
I hope so, Neil. Yeah.
I personally wouldn't be worried, but do you want to try and explain it?
Well, yeah. PSG won the Coupe de France, right?
Yeah, that's right. FA Cup final, job winners. Yeah, PSG, what a surprise.
I'll be honest with you, I've been terrified to pronounce that, and I feel like I might have got away with it.
Coupe de France.
Yeah, there you go. So why is this important? Well, it's important because Lyon finished sixth in League One
and get the Europa Conference League spot, right? So that's what happened. They finished sixth, they get the Europa League spot. But because PSG have already qualified for the Champions League, their cup winners' European spot drops down. So it's a little bit like our sort of situation.
That's right. Yeah,
in the
it's
Premier
the same
League.
As ours, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Therefore, pushing Lyon into the Europa League is how it works, yep. right? So now we ended up in a situation where Lyon were in the Conference League, Palace were in the Europa League.
And so what's the connection between Lyon and Palace?
As all the Palace fans will know, we are in the Eagle Football Group because of one of our co-owners, John Texter,
right.
Who owns the football group, who wanted out and wanted to buy Everton at one point. We don't quite know what he wants. And I think there was a rumours the other week about the fact he was making a grab for the whole club, and Steve Parrish like, get away from me.
He's clearly passionate about the Eagles.
I think what he's clearly passionate about is having more control.
Yeah.
But in this situation, thank God he doesn't, because UEFA rules say no individual or entity can have control or influence over more than one club competing in European tournaments to protect competition integrity. And Neil, I worry about integrity. It's an important thing for me.
Do you know the number of the percentage ownership that they have, that Texter has?
The Eagle Football Group owns 43% of Palace.
So
and also Texter has 88% of Lyon. But the other thing to consider is that Texter doesn't even have overall voting rights or anything of Palace. Like the final say is actually the chairman, who's got the minority stake, Steve Parrish. So I wanted to bring it up on this platform because to have the wondrous fact that there's a Brighton fan here who has just said that it's absolute nonsense. Mm. Anyone I know that has come at me with that now can now rest in the knowledge that it's absolute rubbish.
Yeah, I mean, nice try. Don't get me wrong, but it's not going to happen. So I think you'll be absolutely fine to lose every game in Europe next season.
Well, do you know what, though? The funny thing is that even if it does happen, do you know what would happen?
Go on.
We'd end up in the Conference League.
Oh, well, okay.
And we'd bloody win it anyway.
You might
win
that one.
So whatever happens, guys, we're going to Europe.
We've set the record straight here on Seagull Eagle.
We're all going on a European tour.
No, you're cutting out, Andy. I can't quite hear you.
Oh, I got it wrong, actually. We're not all going on a European tour, are we? Sorry.
Wow.
Sorry.
That's going to be the end of Seagull Eagle ever. No, I'm joking.
Well, that's a wrap for episode 8 of Seagull Eagle.
Episode 8, blimey. And it's the end of season. But listen, please hit that subscribe button. We really want you to, because that means you get your alerts for the next episode lands and all the other things that come with it.
And don't forget, we're all over TikTok, Facebook, Instagram and X. So search Seagull Eagle and you'll find us.
We'll be back next week to review the season as a whole and how we think both teams have fared, along with transfer speculation, club news, and some special features.
But until then, up the Eagles!
Eagles!